Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Well, County Kildare is set to experience the highest increase in home values in Ireland, with a 20% rise in residential property value expected over the next 12 months, according to the 2022 Sunday Times Property Price Guide. That was released, of course, yesterday morning. Now, to discuss this, I'm joined on the line by Patrick O'Donoghue. He's the primary researcher for the Property Price Guide with the Sunday Times. Patrick, good morning to you.
Good morning, Owen.
So, as I say, a significant increase, it seems, here in Kildare. In fact, it's going to be the highest in the country.
That's right, Owen. We've seen predictions for the year ahead in double digits in other counties, but they're far outstripped by County Kildare at the top of the leaderboard there with a predicted 20% increase, average price increase on all house types in the county predicted for the year ahead. In terms of even the breakdown of specific house types in different areas of Kildare, there are big increases, tens of thousands of euros in price growth predicted across different property types. For example, you take, say, you know, a three-bed semi in Naas. I mean, 350,000 is what we're hearing from our estate agents would be the average cost of one of those types of houses for 2021. That's set to inflate to about 380,000 euro for 2022. Similar increases seen in Kildare Town, Newbridge. And those large detached homes with a bit of land, a bit of space where people can kind of, I suppose, maybe have a bit more space for working from home perhaps, or to kind of have a bit of quality of life while restrictions are tight if they do return to levels we've previously seen. We've seen big increases there predicted as well, with, you know, tens of thousands, again, between 20 and 1,000 euro increases for those types of houses. For example, Kildare Town, a large detached home with land, predicted price increase of about 35,000 euro. So Kildare is definitely one of the big hitters for the year ahead.
I suppose in many ways, and we've discussed this on the programme before, here in Kildare we're lucky in how close we are to Dublin and we're along the greater commuter belt, but then on the opposite end of the scale we take a hit when it comes to house prices, because a lot of people would tend to move out from the city to the suburban areas. Interesting to hear about Kildare Town, because that's quite south in the county, so the likes of Selbridge, Naas and Newbridge you would have expected, but Kildare Town taking an increase there is quite of an increase. Just tell me about the Sunday Times Property Price Guide then, Patrick, and the research behind this, who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so the Sunday Times Property Price Guide, basically we survey estate agents across the country and within Dublin. This is part two of our guide, the national guide. So it takes into account home values across the country, outside of the capital, outside of Dublin. So we've spoken to estate agents in each of the areas and gotten a breakdown of the figures for different house types and their values. So you'd have, you know, three-bed semi-detached, four-bed homes, large period houses, things like that. And what they will do is they'll provide us with figures for what they would call the average prices for 2021 across those house types and what their predicted increases or predicted prices will be for those house types in the year ahead. And we have seen house price increases predicted across the board for the year ahead. So it does look as if inflation is set to increase. And really they're citing, Owen, the lack of supply as the key factor driving that, and of course the pandemic has exacerbated issues with supply, with demand staying as strong as ever. So demand is really outstripping supply at the moment, and that's the key factor driving the increases is what we're hearing.
And Patrick, we mentioned from the outset that Kildare does have the highest predicted growth there in terms of percentages, 20% increase. But what about the counties around us, for example, in Laois, Carlow, Wicklow, Offaly? What are we seeing there?
Yeah, so other counties, we've the likes of Laois, there's a predicted price increase of between 10 and 15%. So again, a very hefty increase, but not quite up there at the heights that Kildare is set to reach. At the other end there, we have Wicklow. There's a predicted increase there in North County Wicklow of about 5%. So that's at the lower end. But home values would have been, I suppose, being closer to Dublin as well, they would have been quite high to begin with. So maybe less of an ability to jump higher there. So we are seeing double-digit growth predicted in South County Wicklow as well, at the upper end, a potential of a 10% increase there. So I wouldn't feel alone in the double-digit prediction, but definitely Kildare is looking as if it's going to see the most extreme increase, according to our sources.
I know in Carlow as well, it's 10%, while in Offaly it's between 7.5% to 10%. But Patrick, if we want to uproot and leave Kildare, where nationally is looking like the places that have the most affordable homes or the most affordable areas?
Yeah, I mean, again, inflation is across the board, but there are still places where you might find house types that are traditionally deemed a little bit more affordable at the lower end of the market. So, for example, according to our research, the top five most affordable areas for three-bed houses would be largely... So Leitrim would top the leaderboard there in terms of affordability. Mohill in County Leitrim, you'd get a three-bed house for a predicted for an average of about €118,000. Ballinamore in County Leitrim, about €125,000 for a three-bed house. And then on the other... just bringing up the rear of the top five, we'd have Letterkenny in County Donegal, where you might get a three-bed house for between, just in the range of around £140k to £160k. So if anyone is looking to uproot, they'd be the places, I suppose, the price guide might recommend most highly.
Yeah, and then at the other end of the scale, you have the most expensive areas for three-bed houses. Now, I understand that the research that you do does exclude Dublin, or you focus on that in a separate research. So this is looking at the rest of the country. But Greystones in North County Wicklow is quite expensive, and then you have the other places, the other cities, such as Cork and Galway, featuring highly here.
That's right, yes. Greystones in North County Wicklow is, according to our research, the top. It's topping that list of the top five most expensive areas for three-beds. And the average price of a three-bed there would be about nearly 500,000. So you'd be coming up to the half-million mark there. And then the likes of properties, three-bed houses in Cork City, on Model Farm Road, Ballinlough, places there, again, between the 400,000 to €450,000 price range. Cork City South, again, at number four, Blackrock in Cork City South, €395,000. So just coming up for 400K. And then Salt Hill in Galway City, again, quite expensive. An average price of a three-bed house there, according to our agent, at about €393,000. So that would be at the upper end of the market.
Well, as somebody who is trying to get on the property ladder, I always find it very interesting going through some of these figures here. As we said, County Kildare is set to experience the highest increase in home values in Ireland, with a 20% rise in residential property value. That's followed closely then by Laois, our near neighbours, between 10 and 15%, and Roscommon then in third on 10%. And indeed, Patrick O'Donoghue is the author of this report. And as I say, it's featured in the Sunday Times from yesterday, the 2022 Sunday Times Property Price Guide. Patrick, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for your time, Owen. All the best.
Thank you, lads, for that. Now, some messages in regards to our politicians getting bodyguards and specialised cars. A listener is not happy with that and says, people aren't safe walking the streets, and the first thing our politicians do is look for security for themselves. When are people going to wake up? Yeah, but as I said, you know, once you're on how prominent they are, and there are risks, and nobody wants to see anybody injured or hurt in any shape, manner or form. Also, some messages coming in on the WhatsApp, just a couple of one of these. It says, "Hi Clem, an issue that needs to be immediately addressed is the lack of lighting at the junctions on the motorway at night. Lights turned off at junction 3, 4 and 5 that I know of. Maybe you can find out why. It's an accident waiting to happen," says Mary. "And it's freezing out here, 0 degrees, but my car temperature is saying 37 degrees. It thinks it's in a it's on holidays in the sun." I think so too. Now, can I remind you, by the way, of a special promotion that we started this morning, which is going to last and last and last and last, which somebody ultimately could win €1,000. We're kicking it off today. It's a mystery voice with a prize of €100 if you can guess the three mystery voices. We'll play it in the next hour, by the way. And this morning, the guests that came in on the breakfast programme, well, I saw them earlier anyway, but they've just, I think they've slipped for the moment. Simon Cowell, Louis Walsh, Mel B. Right, they were all wrong. Jamie Kinahan from Kilcullen guessed those three. So it's not any of those three. On every programme across the day, we'll pick one listener from the entrance who will have a chance to get in for it. And each day we'll add €10. Now, on a Friday, if it's not one, So, for example, in 5 days' time, if it's €140 on Friday, we'll double it next Monday and every Monday afterwards until we get a winner, up to a maximum of €1,000. So your chance to guess the mystery voice will come in the next hour. Here, I'm going to cheat. Don't enter it now, okay? But here it is. You have less than a second to guess it. But don't enter now. I'll play it in the second hour.
Yeah.
And...
no.
That's it. Right? I haven't a clue. And by the way, no use wondering, do I know who they are? I don't. Or at least, I can't remember anyway, in regards to that. Let's go to the Naas Municipal District. Ciara, you've Councillor Bill Clear, I understand.
Exactly. Good morning, Councillor Clear.
Morning, Ciara. Thank you very much for having me. And can just say first, congratulations to the Naas Senior Ireland team. You know, they did us proud, and particularly to their family who would have put a big effort in, you know, going back on many years, you know. And it all would have started with a guy called John Holmes, who gets every hurler started in Naas. So thank you very much and congratulations.
I mean, some year Naas had, 2021, didn't they, with the success of the Tidy Towns and for the footballers and hurlers. So, yeah, congratulations is well due. We're going to start with your council motion in regards to updating the members on the status of the houses that the council purchased in the details provided in Naas and when they will be renovated. Just talk us through those exact houses you're speaking about, Bill.
Yeah, it's down in Basin Street, which has got a number of houses that are derelict, you know, and I searched around and I was told that the council had bought. Turns out they didn't. They have not bought them. They're privately owned still. We're doing a derelict project in Naas at the moment, and we've come up with 64 properties that are derelict in the town. We intend using carrots and stick, various ways of doing it to get these houses back into use, you know. So now the council are interested in buying these kind of houses, you know, to put in families, and look at the start of a project, and I'm trying to get as much information about all these empty derelict projects around
so
the town.
So 64 so far, is that what you said, in the Naas area?
64 so far, okay. Yeah, and on okay. The main street alone we have 24 empty properties, you know, which is a lot, and we walk by them every day. We don't see them, we get used to them, but I think it's time to stop and for the council to kind of say, look, we have to sort this out before it gets too bad.
Okay, you also asked the council for an update on the construction of the footpath. This is at the petrol station in Salins. Obviously we know a lot of work is happening at the moment in Salins, but you asked, will it be constructed as part of the Salins interim permanent measures proposed for the village or town?
Yeah, Salins is getting a lot of work done at the moment, you know, and they are getting what's called interim measures, which are like temporary measures put in for cycling and walking, pedestrian cyclists, and to make it safer for the town. We just had two fatalities, you know, and two mm-hmm. serious injuries, you know. So, yes, it is going to be part of it, which is good, and I'm delighted at that. But listen, you know, I can walk from one end of Naas from any direction, in and out, and I can on a footpath, whereas in Salins you can't do that. You have to go over and back, cross over and back. I always say it's a poor relation and Naas being left, you know, and personally, you know, as a public representative, I'm going to do my utmost best to, at least after my term as a councillor, to have two footpaths, one either side, all the way from one end to the other end, as a basic, because I think it's a basic right, particularly older.
Very busy village as well, obviously. You also asked the council to install signage and road markings. That's at the entrance to Dunn's in Naas. You're advising people not to block the footpath with their vehicles. Is that happening a lot?
It's a huge, huge problem since Dunn's open, you know.
It's
Dunn's
a very
really
small car park,
town.
Bill. That's the main thing you hear from people all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, I know they have tried to be in talks with the taxi, with the car park across the road, and they need access across the road, you know, and that's something as part of the regeneration of the main street, we will probably have to do by putting a crossing straight across the road like you used to
and
have.
Bill, just in regards to that, that itself will bring problems, because obviously when people are leaving a grocery store, 9 times out of 10, their trolley is absolutely packed full. They've gone for the full weekly shop, and getting that from one side of a road, a busy main road, to the other is going to cause problems.
I met with Dunn's, and they actually said that they would be in favour of it, you know, and they would get their staff to help people across the road, you know, which is, they were, yeah, no problem, because that particular Dunn's, they tell me, for its size, 15,000 square metres, I think it is the most successful Dunn's in the country. It's a victim of its success, which is brilliant, and it helped bring huge business into town, but well, we have to manage it. You know, we have to manage everything. It's not always going to be possible. It's easier, but the big thing is the footpath gets blocked all the time, and it's forcing children out onto the road. And we can't, from a safety point of view, we cannot stand by that. We have to sort it out. Now, that will require the footpath to be pushed out further, a lane taken away. So there's a lot of work to be done. But in the short term, I'm looking for signage. I don't have everybody to put it on their side, so the council to do something on their side. So we're going to investigate that and get some sort of short-term fix. But the long-term fix is going to be a big. But look, you have to manage traffic. That's just the reality of life. And it's much better the way it was. It was an empty derelict site, former Super Quinn, for a long, long time, you know, good to see.
Bill, you might have heard a texter in there in regards to lighting, and I just want to bring this up with you in terms of Naas Tidy Towns, because there is a review, I believe, of lighting going on in regards to the town as a whole.
Yeah, look, I had a motion in about Monterey Park. I asked that all the lighting be changed to LEDs. These are the brighter, whiter lights, you know, because Monterey Park was dark. A lot of the lights are blocked by trees. It's these old-fashioned lights. And I actually put in the motion and listened. There's no easy way to say. I said, listen, because it had been brought to my attention by ladies who I know who run, and also my family members who run. I didn't feel comfortable in the park. And they said, can we get the lights
Can
we get better lights, you know? So the idea, what you do is you replace these with what's called LEDs. They're on our main streets, they're a whiter light, you know. And they said to look into it, but I'm going to keep pushing on it. Now, I did get a bit of pushback at the meeting, the council meeting myself, that I shouldn't be saying it's for females, you know. And look, people will complain. I generally, it's the right thing to do, you know.
I mean, obviously, good lighting is going to protect every single member of society.
Everybody. But it was brought to my attention by people, female who run in there, you know.
Okay.
So that's what I was trying to fix. And also on the Salins Bypass, there's no lighting in the Salins Bypass, you know. It's a lonely place. A lot of people are walking, and you see people out there now walking with torches. That is not acceptable in a modern 111 million project, you know. Lights go out all the time, and we have to try to get them fixed. What we ask people to send WhatsApp as a picture, and there is, and if they could, the location. And I'm trying to get these tags on the light poles so people can say this is Main Street, like number 25, you know.
Okay.
That makes it very easier. But yeah, lighting's a big issue for me, always has been. I have a daughter, I have a wife, I have a sister. You know, they all run, and they all, I think, I worry for them all, and that's the truth, you know.
Yeah, well. Listen, Councillor Bill Clear of the Social Democrats, thank you so much for joining me this morning of Naas MD.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Last week, the Road Safety Authority announced what's called a derogation from European Union rules, which will allow professional truck drivers to drive 112 hours in a fortnight. That's an increase from the normal limit of 90 hours, so we're talking about 22 hours extra by my mathematics anyway, which aren't always guaranteed to be correct, by the way. I'm joined by the President of the Irish Road Haulage Association, Eugene Drennan. Good morning again, Eugene.
Good morning, Tim. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for joining us again. So, Eugene, what's all this about, and why has a derogation been put in place?
This is about a little bit of flexibility within the rules to help us overcome the Omicron virus and the short timeline we were getting of notification of people unable to turn up for work, either by having been in close contact, really, because they didn't have any of the disease themselves, yet they couldn't come to work. We had loads been left in yards. We couldn't keep the supply chain going, or there was a fear that we wouldn't be able to. And this derogation was sought. Now, you must bear in mind, Tim, in all of this, the derogation is built into the legislation from the inception of it throughout Europe. It's just how we use it, in what manner we use it, to put a note and formally make the application and notification to Europe that we are going to use it. And to that end, Tim, I sought it from the Minister Hildegard Nocton, and she then put it to the RSA to get the right format. And in conjunction with an expert on tachograph law in Waterford, Alan Nugent, who is very good to them, this, we came up with this template and this format, which within the legislation is in itself very reflective of how we do our work. It's very It is flexible enough so we could go, but it doesn't really break major rules. And it stops us being prosecuted in Europe because the notification has gone up. That's the whole reason.
Yeah, but Eugene, I know there's concern being expressed about it, and later we'll address that particular issue. But looking at the figures, drivers normally, as I understand it, were driving 40 hours a week or maybe a max of 45. It's now gone up to 56 hours in a week potentially for drivers. That's in effect like in two extra days, is it not?
No, no, it's neither. It's done in quarterly, it's done in fortnightly timelines. So it's gone from 90 to 112 in 2 weeks. So your maths are fine, but it's 22 hours in 2 weeks, which is 11 in the week, really. Now, you can tweak that a little bit up and down within it, but you cannot go outside the parameters of that, of the fortnightly.
But would you,
timeline.
Eugene,
and that in itself, just to explain it in layman's language to you before, excuse me, cutting across here, that in effect means we can work each Saturday of the 3 week period in a row. That takes care of 9 hours and of the 11 in the week, and we have an hour in two other days during the week of driving time. So when you break it down, it's within reason. And I know you're quoting the professor's he studied there on time, on sleep and sleep deprivation and driving hours. But what highlighted this is a little bit of scaremongering from some politicians to say this was a danger. May I assure the public out there, no danger. It is enshrined in the legislation for board that it can do. And we don't go into the drive, the extra driving time, without having a full rest before we do it.
All right, the professor you're referring to is Professor Andrew Coogan, who's behavioural neuroscientist and director of the Chronology and Sleep Research Laboratory at Maynooth University. We'll hear from him in a minute. But finally, Eugene Drennan, are you concerned at all, Eugene, that safety might be compromised by drivers taking on these extra hours?
No, not in the least, because the time, the rest time is in there, and the rest before you take it up, before you take up the hour during the week, you must have a little bit of rest before you go on to the extra hour. And before you do that extra day, you have a full night's sleep before you do it. You're talking to a man who drove the continent before ever there was a tachograph, and it was guidelined by different elements where you took your breaks, like border crossings and paperwork and all that. And we have a good safety record in Ireland. We have one of the best safety records in trucks in Ireland. So no, I have no qualms that this will lead to any road safety issue. Other accidents may happen because of other reasons. There may be sleep deprivation because of medical conditions or other reasoning. People just don't sleep well of night. But within the concept of the derogation of allowing, should you happen to need it, a little bit of flexibility. No, I don't. And I think we should use it a little bit more often in bad weather times or in other calamity situations. Not a free fraud, not open, but it's good. And we were proactive in getting it. We've one of the best templates put in, better than the UK. How often we hear that Ireland cannot do it as well as the rest of the world and all of that. In this occasion, we have been proactive rather than reactive.
All right. On that note, Eugene, good to talk to you again, Eugene. Thanks very much. I'm also joined by the said professor that we talked about on this topic, Professor Andrew Coogan. Good morning, Professor Coogan.
Hi, Clem. How are you?
Now, you would be taking issue with Eugene's assurances that he doesn't have concerns about safety in this case, because you say there are issues of potential sleep deprivation arising here. Is there?
Yeah. So if we think about why do we have those European-wide regulations in the first place, and we have them to protect drivers, professional drivers and other road users from the effects of sleep deprivation, which we know is a significant contributor to fatal and non-fatal road accidents. So if we are weakening those regulations through the derogation, and we're saying, well, there's no impact on safety, well, why do we have those regulations in the first place? That doesn't make sense to me. So let me give you an example. There's another group of professionals in transport that have their working time strictly regulated, and they're pilots. Now, would your listeners feel comfortable getting on a plane being flown by a pilot who has had a more lax regulation of their working time than a plane flown by a pilot under the normal circumstances?
Could I just make one point to you on that, that if there is a shortage of pilots to fly planes, flights get cancelled, and maybe travelling, people travelling from A to B is not as important as the trucking of goods right across Europe, or food supplies, stuff like that. And, for example, we know that the whole truck network from this country across the continent and back, our economy relies on that in a way that we wouldn't be relying on, for example, planes coming and going. What do you make of that?
Well, I'd have two answers to that. First of all, for planes flying, we get a choice if we want to board a plane or not. Other road users don't get a choice about who they share the road with and who they share the risk on the road with. The second point, yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't take an issue with the hauliers and the operational demands that the hauliers need to meet. I think ultimately this is a result of our failure to control COVID. I mean, we've had basically the worst COVID epidemic in the world over the last couple of weeks. And that is the root cause of the problem. So I'm certainly sensitive to the operational needs of the hauliers. And, you know, and all they do is they ask the minister for the derogation. The minister grants the derogation. But I would have significant concerns about the routine granting of these derogations, because ultimately they will increase the risk on the road for the drivers themselves, for the HGV drivers, but also for all other road users.
The Eugene there, you were listening to him as he spoke in terms of that. He said the extra hours are going to be managed in such a way that there will be, you know, sufficient rest periods will be increased and that, and it will be done in a structured manner.
Well, it's still structured, but they are decreasing the rest period, they're increasing the number of consecutive days the drivers can work on, and they're increasing the number of consecutive driving hours the drivers can do. And there's an important thing here, that if I go from driving from 9 to 10 hours, that increase in sleepiness is a lot bigger than if I increase my driving hours, let's say, from 4 to 5 hours. So it's not just you're getting the same bang for your buck. The risk is going up significantly more the more you add in. The same it is for consecutive days driving. The more consecutive days driving, that risk goes up and up and up. So actually, these derogations are increasing driving time, and they're decreasing the rest periods available to drivers for the period of the derogation. And all that will increase the amount of sleep problems, sleep deprivation, and ultimately, unfortunately, increase the risk on the road. Now, hopefully, over the short period of the derogation, this doesn't manifest itself in any unfortunate incident.
Okay.
But it's a crossing our fingers and hoping situation.
Okay, on that note,